Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Hi, this is Pat Iyer, and today we're going to be talking on Legal Nurse Podcast about something that's really important in terms of how you present your credentials to your clients and your prospects. And that's how you write your resume and write your profile on LinkedIn. I have with me today an expert who can address both of those questions, who has experience helping others in presenting their credentials in the most polished way. His name is Howie Appel. Howie, thank you for joining me for this program today.
It's great to be here. Thanks for the invite.
I thought we would start with resumes. And a little known fact about me is that in the early 1980s, when I was just starting my business, I volunteered to help people write their resumes for the princely sum of $5. I'll bet you charge more than that, Howie.
I would say so.
And there was something about writing resumes that fascinated me. And one of the things that fascinates me the most is how you lay it out, how you make sure that it's the right length, and that you don't have too little information on it, but you also don't have too much information on it. So what are the recommendations now in terms of how long a resume should be?
Okay, the resume should be, first of all, the resume is all about you, but it's geared to make the recruiter or the decision maker happy. Their goal is to find the right people, and obviously you're the right person. Now, what makes the recruiter content with the resume so they're willing to read on? The first thing we want to do is the format, and it's called white space. White space being on either side, you're with your name, your contact information in the center of the resume. Now, you ask how long it should be. It varies by person because a resume is a personal issue. First of all, a person with no experience at all, right out of college or right out of high school, is a one-page resume. 98% of the resumes I work with are two pages long. And a person who's got a master's degree or higher, plus 20 years experience, will have possibly a three-page resume, realizing that the recruiter is going to focus on only page one. Once they read page one and they're excited about it, next thing you know, they're going to say, well, let's read on. And that means they're going to be prompted to read page two. And page two is going to have more information. And if you will begin the resume by saying you have a summary. And the summary is going to give the fine points and the achievements and your traits. And once it gives the recruiter that information, then you build on that based on your background, which, of course, is in chronological order on your resume. And that's basically what they're looking for, is a way to separate you from somebody else. And the way you do that is by letting them know what kind of position you're seeking. And then after that, justifying it, not with an objective. The objective is old. Okay. You don't want to tell the recruiter or the decision maker what kind of work you want to do. Okay. Because they know what kind of work you can do. So they're going to look at your summary to justify everything you do. And that is the way to introduce it.
In the field of legal nurse consulting, usually about 99% of the time, the person looking at the resume is the attorney who is interested in hiring a nurse as a subcontractor, independent contractor, or an expert witness to be involved in litigation. And I know you've got some familiarity with this field because your partner is a legal nurse consultant. So we have a double whammy right now.
Yeah, you get, I have a good feel for the language in both medical right. and legal.
And what I have seen is people, particularly expert witnesses, have more extensive documents. They have curriculum vitae as opposed to resume. What are the differences between a resume and a curriculum vitae?
First of all, there is a misnomer there. A curriculum vitae, it originates in Great Britain. And believe it or not, curriculum vitae means it is a listing of courses. It's a listing of publications. And that is basically what this curriculum vitae is, a listing of your publications and the courses you've taken. The resume, on the other hand, is a history of your background, your experience, your affiliations, your achievements, and your certifications. All this stuff is going to be on your resume. By the way, typically, a curriculum vitae is far, far longer than a resume. It's interesting reading, but primarily in an academic environment.
Yes, I have seen those documents written by physicians. Sometimes they are an inch thick. It's amazing because they list every publication that they've ever been involved in. And if they have a long and illustrious history, there are a lot of publications and involvement being on editorial boards, their board certifications, their clinical experience. It can be very extensive.
It is. And that's why I recommend that you stick to the actual resume when transmitting and when identifying yourself. You want to tell the attorneys that you're going to be addressing and or their management exactly what your background is, more so than the courses you've taken. The courses you've taken and your publications, they've done their homework. They have an idea. And if you get to the point where you're being interviewed, that is all now in the history. That is all understood. Now they want to get to know you personally and what your background is and hear it directly from you in what they call a talking paper as opposed to the actual software in this case.
Yeah, and you've brought up a good point because if you are an expert witness and you've listed the courses that you've taught, for example, then that gives the opposing counsel the opportunity to say, well, I want the handouts from the lecture that you gave on compartment syndrome because you're an expert on a case involving compartment syndrome and I want to see what you're telling other people about the condition. Right. That's a trap for an expert witness. And I don't think anybody really cares what courses you've taken in nursing school or in college as much as whether you have the capability demonstrated by your resume or CV to show that you're sufficiently qualified for whatever it is.
Practical experience is very, very important.
I didn't hear you. Say that again.
The practical experience that you've had is very, very important.
Yes, absolutely. Are there any terms that we used to put on resumes that are now out of fashion or antiquated?
Yes, there are. There are several. The first one I want to discuss is the word objective. When you put the word objective on a resume, you're literally telling the reader that this is what you want to do. And no matter what they have available, this is what you want to do. And primarily, what they have available and what you want to do is already given. So objective has been replaced for the most part by the word summary. Now, at the end of a resume, typically people wrote references available upon request.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, when you fill an application out for a job, they're going to ask you for references. It's obviously. Okay, so that's become antiquated. We no longer use that. Now, the other term that a lot of people use is responsible for. Responsible for means that you are taking your job description and you're making that into your resume. That's called plagiarism. So therefore, you're using somebody else's terms to describe what you can do, responsible for X, Y, Z. However, if you put an action word in there, handled, managed, directed, monitored, all these terms are going to be more directed toward what you've done as opposed to what you are able to do. And believe it or not, in some job descriptions, you do far more than they want. And they know that, but they can see the word responsible for. And then that's another thing that we avoid. So those are the three major areas that are no longer used. And of course, you know, you never use the word I, me, or my on a resume, because obviously it's written directly to the people. Those are the basic terms that you want to avoid using on a resume.
And can you comment a little bit about being able to proofread your own resume?
Proofreading a resume, very important point. First of all, there's another term that you need to avoid using, and that's going to go right into this, and that's called attention to detail. Now, the term attention to detail implies that there are no typos on your resume, not one, and that a third person reading your resume is going to say to you, you misspelled this word, or you put a grammatical error in there, whatever. The point is, do not send a resume without having another person, myself, review that resume to make sure there's no typos, because one typo will definitely put you on the other pile. So yes, it's very important you have another person read your resume after you've written it.
I have looked at resumes, probably thousands of resumes at this point in my life, because I looked at people who I wanted to hire as employees, and I looked at resumes of nurses and doctors who wanted me to give them expert witness work. And I was amazed, particularly at the resumes that contained typographical errors with dates. I saw several resumes where the dates overlapped, indicating the person was working in more than one job. And in some cases it was true, but in other cases it was a typographical error. I've had resumes that have had phone numbers that were incorrect. I couldn't reach the person to contact them for an interview because the phone number was off. There was one woman who applied for a job in my company more than one time, and I happen to remember her resume because it was so poorly laid out with the way that the font was used. It was an unusual font, and it was hard to read. So I kept it aside in on a drawer of people I hadn't contacted for an interview. Then I got the new resume in with the same terrible font, but I started comparing them. And she had changed her experience around from the time she did the first resume to the second. She changed years and jumbled things out of order. So I wondered, well, like, which resume should I pay attention to?
Well, first of all, you got some very, very good points there. Digital is the name of the game. And you don't put down DEC for December 2019, you put down 12/2019, especially if you have a position for a year or less. See, if you have 2011 to 2012 on your resume, they don't know whether that means from December to January or whether that means from January to the following December, which is 2 years. So you've got to be very careful in that. Also, I want to bring out the fact that you want to avoid the use of italics. The italics smudges, they're never going to tell you this, by the way. When you go through the applicant tracking system, ATS, it's going to smudge both lines and italics. Now, as a recruiter for 25 years, I would shake my head when I see italics because I know it's going to smudge someplace along the road. And I don't like italics. Now, you mentioned font. In the font, font is very important. It's called a recruiter-friendly font is Times New Roman. All the resumes I put together are in the font, a 12 font of Times New Roman. And I take all the italics. Another thing I want to mention to you is that The job title at a company is far more important than the actual company. As a recruiter, I want to know what your title was. What was your job? What did you do? It doesn't matter. Well, it does to a certain extent, but it doesn't matter what the name of the company is. Now, also, no abbreviations. You mentioned that earlier. Abbreviations are taboo on a resume, unless, of course, for example, OSHA. Everybody knows what OSHA stands for. And to spell it all out is hazardous to your mind. So you can put OSHA in there. You've heard of a company called IBM. Back in the 60s and 70s, everybody typed IBM. You don't type the name of the company out because it's well known. States, for example, New Jersey, you type out the word New Jersey. You don't type NJ. I'll tell you why. The reason why is the decision maker thinks that you're looking for abbreviations, a way to shorten the trip. You're looking for ways to cut corners. That's an indicator that you cut corners all the time and you don't explain yourself clearly each time. So therefore, no abbreviations and spell everything out and do not put italics or underlines on the resume.
And it's funny you mentioned OSHA. Let's spell out OSHA for the people who are listening who do not know what that organization is.
OSHA stands for the Office of Safety Health Administration. And most people in responsible positions are going to know what OSHA stands for. It's a compliance issue. When you're working in an operating room, you need a clean room. You need all your instruments hygienically clean. And that means that there are going to be yellow lines on the ground for the areas you don't go into. These are all OSHA standards. And the term compliant with OSHA standards is a very important factor on the resume because you want to comply with local, state, and federal regulations when it comes to anything to do with legal terms and nursing terms so that everyone understands where you're coming from. And that, by the way, that is one of the few acronyms that I actually use, OSHA. Office of Safety and Health Administration.
And one more point before we go on from resumes is that I remember seeing a resume from a physician who had listed his Social Security number and his Drug Enforcement Agency number, which permits him to prescribe narcotics. They were both on his resume.
Okay. That comes under the term TMI. You've got to understand, the writer of the resume has got to understand the main purpose of a resume is to get the interview. The main purpose is to get the FaceTime or on the telephone for a hiring manager, be it a lawyer, be it the office manager, or whomever may be the person who's been designated to screen you in or screen you out. Now, as far as numbers are concerned, I recommend, by the way, that if you are an RN, you put your credentials in there, okay? Most of the people I know who are legal nurse consultants do have their BSRN, and therefore they should have those indicators on the resume. Now, if you have an RN number, then that's okay, but most all of us recognize the legality and the certifications than RN goes through. And trust me, by the way, I certainly appreciate all that. My partner has her alphabet soup up there, and I think it's got to be up there, both, by the way, both on resumes and on LinkedIn, which we'll get into. But yes, it's not necessary to have all that information on the resume because you want something to talk to the person about. And the resume is going to introduce you.
Yes, it's not necessary. And in the case of the physician who is an expert witness, I don't think he realized that his resume would be passed on from one attorney to paralegal to clerk. And having his Social Security number and DEA number in there made identity theft and fraud much easier for the people who handled his document. I gave him the feedback to this neurosurgeon as to why I thought he should remove it. And I got a very nice, gracious thank you back and response.
Yeah, you just put a social security number on your resume. That's like saying, I drive a car and here's my driver's license number. You don't need either of those.
Exactly.
Before we continue, listen up. Are you taking advantage of one of the most potent social media sites? LinkedIn is one of the key ways to connect with attorneys. LNCs usually have a limited marketing budget. Many are inexperienced in reaching out to potential clients and do not know how to showcase their special skills. Without effective networking, they risk being left behind as their competition moves forward. They may fail to establish a presence in the marketplace. Is this you? This one-hour training will teach you how to create a powerful professional profile on LinkedIn. You will learn how to best present yourself to the business community, identify worthwhile marketing leads, and reach individuals who would benefit from your skills. You will learn the do's and don'ts of joining in on discussions and posting news events, and how to establish yourself as a valuable resource. Get instant access to this online training at the show notes for podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. Use the code LISTENED in the coupon box at checkout to receive a 25% immediate discount. Now we'll return to the show.
Well, now that we've talked about resumes, and we could go on even longer on this topic, I want to shift over to LinkedIn, because the two of them are very closely related. How you present yourself and your credentials on LinkedIn is rooted in being able to pull together your qualifications on a resume. Tell us about the profile portion of LinkedIn and how we can make that section be as impressive as possible.
Very good. Thank you. LinkedIn has become the platform of the present and the future. The reason why is your profile, first of all, just to mention, by the way, on the resume, you should put your LinkedIn profile URL, okay, which I'll explain in a minute, which is your address, basically. And they can click on your resume because it's soft copy. They're going to click on that resume on the URL for LinkedIn, and that should take them directly to your LinkedIn profile. Now, what is the most important piece of information on your LinkedIn profile? And that is very simply your picture. Your picture should be, must be on that LinkedIn profile. Mm. What is a good picture? A good picture, of course, is from your midsection here to just over the top of your head. And it should be taken about 3 to 5 feet away from you, because we don't want it right head on, because that it just doesn't look professional. Now, to have a smile, obviously. To have a spouse with you, no. You do not need a spouse with you. You just have it by yourself. The background of your picture must be neutral. Neutral colors, similar to what you have in your background or I have in mine. Mine might even be a little bit too busy. Okay. So the most important piece of information is your picture. Second of all is your headline. Your headline comes right under your picture, and that tells the recruiter or anyone, what do you do? By the way, that's also searchable on LinkedIn. If I type a word from your headline or from your summary into LinkedIn, I'm going to get you. And that's what I wanted to do. The LinkedIn profile is a supplement. It's repetitious of your resume. Now, one thing that is very important to mention is the resume is static. Okay, the resume stays the way it is as long as you can keep it that way. The LinkedIn profile is anything but static. It's continually updating, it's continually posting, it's continually giving people more and more good information about you, which means the summary on your resume should be implanted on your LinkedIn profile. And as things happen in your life that you feel important, add them to your LinkedIn, because your connections, which I'll explain shortly, your connections are going to want to see more about you and more about information that's currently up to date. And there's nothing better than keeping your LinkedIn profile up to date, because the person who's going to interview you wants to know what kind of person you are, yada, yada. They want to know, they want to see if you're going to fit into the group, basically. And by having your picture on there and having a headline on there along with your credentials, very, very important. Because if you don't have them there, then they're going to question, a red flag goes up. Now, on your profile, you're going to also have, again, your education. You're going to have your affiliations. And finally, you're going to have your interests, which is going to include groups, which I'll get into later. But the bottom line here is, on your profile, now, above your picture is a banner. And the banner, most people forget about it. If you don't forget about it, if you have a professional put that picture in there, that is also going to be a big thing for the recruiter to see, that you can have, that you know something about LinkedIn. By the way, there are well over 500 million people on LinkedIn. So your next supervisor will be or should be looking at you if they're interested. Every recruiter no longer goes full time to all the recruiting sites. They go to LinkedIn. So basically what I do is I enable the recruiter to see you as you really are, even more so than on your resume. Of course, the resume, of course, is a very important part of LinkedIn. But on your profile, what I call the boilerplate. The boilerplate's got to display you at first glance, and that's going to work really good for you.
All right. I know that we've talked about how your picture should look, and definitely professional, and no pictures of your children and no pictures of your dog instead of you. Can we customize our URL in LinkedIn so it has our name in it as opposed to all those little numbers?
Right. Thank you for bringing that up. On the LinkedIn profile, there is a section called how to contact or contact information. There should be at least three, if not four, different sections in there. Mm-hmm. First of all, your URL. Now, they give you, when you join LinkedIn, they give you a URL, okay, or address. And it has your name hyphenated, then five or six numbers after that. That is called a traditional given. Your mission is to go in there and change that to, for example, Pat Iyer will be PATIYER, and then RN, or maybe it could be your middle initial in there. Anything that'll separate you from everybody else on LinkedIn. Because they're going to tell you, I'm sorry, this URL has been used. So you got to go back in there and make sure it's personalized. And once you get that done, that's great. Now, the other parts that should be on there will be your email address. Now, if you have a cell phone, it's a good idea, if you're looking for a position, it's a good idea to put that cell phone number in there. Because recruiters are going to want to reach out to you. Texting, for the most part, they're going to want to text you. I saw your LinkedIn profile. Let's talk. Okay, your email address should be on there, not your home address. There's no need to have your home address anywhere on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Your email address. Your email address, your phone number, your URL, and basically that's it. Four pieces should be on that contact information. And if you have a website, by the way, even better. Add the website to that section. And they allow you to have no more than three different websites. If you've got a blog, you can put that in there. If you have a Twitter address, that's fine. But for the most part, keep it to those four. Keep it simple, basically.
And a lot of the LinkedIn profiles that I see for legal nurse consultants list their services, but they're using the same language over and over again in terms of I screen cases for merit, I locate expert witnesses. What can we do differently with our profile other than to list the services that we provide to attorneys?
Well, it's a good question. The bottom line here on LinkedIn is separating yourself from the crowd. If you've got a background with an attorney who's well-known, or you know several attorneys who are well-known, then that's a good idea to name drop, because I, as a recruiter, am going to go into that attorney's profile, if he's on there, and check it out. if you mention other names. Now, another important factor is recommendations. You can get recommendations from these attorneys that you work for, all the better. Now, there's a difference between recommendations and endorsements. Be careful. Endorsements is simply a click. I endorse this person. Mm-hmm. It means next to nothing. I've got 47 recommendations on my profile. Anybody can go in there and see these recommendations. Now, they may go back a bit because I don't push that. But, yes, find an area of your expertise, of your background, if you have courtroom experience, if you have experience working in a nursing home, if you have experience working in assisted living, all that should be on there so it may separate you from others who are applying for the same position. How do you stand out? And that's one thing that I do is pull that out of you. I'm like a dentist. I extract teeth, extract information.
I have not heard that.
There's so much information that you don't know that a professional can actually pull out of you. You'd be surprised.
Well, that's a great segue to my last question, which is how can our listeners find out more about you?
How do you find out more about me? Number one, go to my LinkedIn profile.
Right.
If it's okay, I'll give you my contact information right here and now.
Sure.
I live in Orlando, Florida, in a suburb of Orlando, and it's Lake Mary, Florida. And my phone number is area code 407-373-4293. My email address is HRA, for those of you with military background, Hotel Romeo Alpha. And I'm an Air Force veteran, by the way. And I graduated Northeastern University in Boston. And otherwise, you can reach my email address again is hra246@gmail.com. And I do get back to you within 24 hours. If you go my voicemail, trust me, I'll get right back with you. And basically, I'm wide open for you. I enjoy working with legal nurse consultants, and I love the challenge, and I'm here for you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. This has been Howie Appel and Pat Iyer talking about resumes, CVs, LinkedIn, all wonderful tools for conveying your expertise to the people who are in a position to hire you. Thanks for being on the show, Howie. I enjoyed the chat. And for you, our listener, please be sure to check us out again a week from today. We'll have a new interview, a new topic, and we love the fact that you're listening and our listeners' numbers are growing and the comments are great, and we're happy that you're here with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
As a final reminder, get tips and tricks for using LinkedIn more effectively by purchasing our LinkedIn online training at the show notes at podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. You will be polishing your profile and connecting with more people today. And I've got a phenomenal resource for you just waiting on legalnursebusiness.com. My online training and books are designed to help LNCs discover ways to strengthen their skills and their businesses. Check them out at legalnursebusiness.com. Many of us are lifelong learners who enjoy the chance to keep expanding our knowledge, just like the Book of the Month clubs, my membership site, lnceu.com, gives you 2 online trainings every month. We have a yearly payment plan that saves you over $50 compared to paying monthly, and each program is hugely discounted. Look at the options at lnceu.com. And my last website, the lncacademy.com, is the coaching program I offer to a select number of LNCs. You get my personal attention and mentorship so that you can excel and build a strong foundation for your LNC practice. Get all the details at lncacademy.com.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on legalnursepodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on legalnursepodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.